Don't worry, I always do that. Morning, everybody. James Lee, alcoholic. James. I am from Tallahassee, Florida. Boy, it's good to be here. I always kind of take a second to check into the room before I get started and kind of feel the spirit here. Do you feel it?
Yeah.
I feel it. I felt it here all weekend. Huh? I think I know why. God, I think God's here this weekend because if I was God, I'd be here too, you know? What a place. Man. That's a privilege to be here. I want to start with some thank yous to get going here. First, thank you to Cynthia. Where are you? Where is she? She asked me to speak. I don't know how long ago it was. Oh, there you go. She said, is this James? I said, yeah, will you speak in Puerto Vallarta? And I said, you got the right number? You know, so here I am. Very grateful. And I want to thank Marjorie for all the communication she had with all of us. She was amazing. And Danielle for running the show. And I really want to thank Mark. He was sitting right there. I don't know where he went. He helped yesterday. And so thank you so much, wherever you are, Mark. And also want to thank everyone on the committee. Can we give the committee one more round of applause? Because they have done such an amazing job. Man. And I want to tell you, I've been to a lot of conferences, and I've been on a committee for a lot of conferences, and I know how committees work, man. You know, the only thing wrong with committees is everyone on it's an alcoholic, you know. And that means we step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate, and you do that for a year, and then you show up, and this happens. So, and I just want you to know, whatever happened behind the scene, it did not. This weekend has been 5-star, top notch, top drawer. So thank you all very much for that. Wow. And I want to thank Pam and David especially for their service. And you'll find out it has. I usually don't do this till later. It has very special importance to me, which you'll find out later. And I want to thank the other speakers. Matthew, you were amazing last night. Thank you so much. And Adina, wherever you are, the Al-Anon speaker, fabulous, fabulous. If you weren't there, please get the recording. And Mike, Friday night. You know how I'm making you guys clap a lot. I'm sorry. Every now and then, you know where you just go and you show up and you meet somebody and you instantly just like that know that you're going to be friends the rest of your life? That's how I feel about Mike. So it was a pleasure meeting you, and I can't wait to be friends the rest of our lives. Anyway, and lastly, I want to thank my friends from Chicago. Where are you guys? Hands up. There you go. Those are my friends from Chicago. Now, they didn't come here because I'm speaking. They came here for other reasons. But the fact that they showed up, that's thanks, guys, because they, you know, they know me. So I spent 28 years in Chicago. I moved to Tallahassee 4 years ago, and I moved for love. And I usually talk about this part of my story at the end, but I just want to get it. Do you mind indulging me in a love AA love story real quick? No? Yes. Stand up, Jane. This is my beautiful wife, Jane. You know that part of the 12 and 12 where it says boy meets girl on AA campus? Yeah. I once shared from the podium and I said, yeah, in our case it was middle-aged man meets middle-aged woman on AA campus because we met in our 50s. And they said, and somebody came up to me and said, James, don't ever say middle-aged when you talk about your wife. So sorry about that, honey. Anyway, we met in AA. Actually, this is how we met. In 2007, anybody have the Speaker of the Month CDs? Or I used to get them when they were speaker tapes. Remember those cassette tapes? A lot of you guys, you're too young, but they had these cassette tapes, basically reel to reel inside this plastic container. And then it became CDs. One day they'll say, what's a CD? But anyway, they became CDs, and now, of course, they're streaming. So I was a member of Tape of a Month Club, CD of the Month Club, and I got this CD and it said, Jane from Tallahassee. I'm like, I've never heard of her. And I threw it in there, and I was blown away by my wife's story. And I got a crush on her, which was very complicated because I was married. So I got a crush on her. Yeah. Yeah, I know. But a couple years later, we met at a convention in Florida. And we became friends. And we became Facebook friends. You guys heard of Facebook? It's amazing. And we would keep tabs on each other and just, you know. And then I went through a divorce. And in August of 2013, it was final. And so, you know, I was on Facebook a little bit. And I noticed her relationship status changed to single. And thank God for Facebook. So, yeah, we got together in the summer of 2014. We got married 2.5 years ago, and we're still on our honeymoon. Yeah, so it's gushy, isn't it? Aww. And she's my favorite AA speaker. Before Jane and I got together, my favorite AA speaker was my mom. And my mom does quite a bit of talking in AA. You may have heard of her. Her name's Polly P. You guys heard of her? Polly P. You've heard of her? Does anybody know what the P stands for? What does it stand for?
Pistol.
Pistol. Can you think of a better name for my mom? Is she a pistol or what? Yeah, she's a pistol, all right. Well, if you think... So, I didn't hear it either. They laughed, though.
Son of a gun.
Son of a gun. I like that. Son of a gun. Woo! That's a better joke than the one I'm about to tell. Okay, here comes the joke, you guys. Pistol, eh? She's a pistol, all right. Well, if you think she's a pistol now, you should have seen her loaded. Yours was better. Yours was better. Woo! All right. So my mom used to be my favorite AA speaker. She's now number two. And just a note, guys, your wife always gets number one. Mom moves to number two. Just remember that. Am I right? Yeah, okay. We had that conversation yesterday. Okay. not we. We were talking with someone else. It was okay. Whew. All right. I'm having fun. I don't know about anybody else. I guess I need to start my story now. I'm a child of an alcoholic, obviously. My mom, and she's a real alcoholic, all right. But being a child of an alcoholic has nothing to do with me being an alcoholic. I'll say that right away in case I forget later. But it was an interesting way to grow up. And we usually start our AA talks, often start our AA talks with our first drink. So I'm going to tell you about my first drink. I was 5 years old. And my first drink was pills because I was in the car. So what was happening was my family unit was my dad, my mom, my brother, who was 2 years older than me, and myself. So he was 7, I was 5. We were in the back seat, they were in the front seat. And I was a real hyper kid. I don't know if any other hyper kids in the room here. I was like, I bounced around. I was really trouble, and I was a lot of work. And so I was bouncing around the back seat a little bit more than normal. I'm a lot more than normal. And they were wondering, what's going on? There's something wrong with him. And my mom says, uh-oh. She reached into her purse. She pulled out this now empty bottle of pills. And this was before the days of childproof caps. Remember that? You know? So I, and it turned out to be speed. Now, this wasn't just speed. This was Air Force doctor prescribed speed. And I downed whatever was left in the bottle, and I was bouncing around in the back seat. And they got all exercised. And they said, they rushed to the hospital. The doctor gave me a once-over and said, well, it's too late to pump his stomach. Let's see what happens, you know? So, that was five. So I stayed sober for 10 years. And I didn't need AA. Forget AA, man. That was white-knuckle sobriety. Who needs AA? Don't need that. And a lot happened in that 10 years. And I just want to really briefly tell a bit of my mom's story. And the reason I'm going to tell a bit of my mom, some of you may have heard this, but I'm going to tell it because of its impact on me. Okay, so I'm going to tell it as I experienced it. So here's her story real quick. At the end of 1976, I was 14 years old. She began to bounce in and out of detoxes in Tarrant County, Texas. We were living in a suburb of Fort Worth. And she was bouncing in and out of detoxes. She went to treatment. She was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. She really liked AA. She really liked you people, but she did not think she was an alcoholic, and she didn't think she deserved to be sober. She was very guilty about things that she had done. And she decided she did not want to be sober, and she did not want to live. So what she did was she went to that one of those Air Force doctors, got a bottle of Valium. She went to a liquor store, got a bottle of scotch. She checked herself into a motel in Euless, Texas. She entered that motel, she downed that bottle of pills, she drank that bottle of scotch, and she waited to die. Then it didn't work, as you've heard, probably, because she's still alive. I want to get that out of the way right away. She didn't work. Anyway, so she waited to die. Her friend, who was not a member of AA, something came over her that something is wrong with Polly. So she started driving around looking for my mom's car. And she drove around and she pulled up, she saw it in front of this motel. And it was one of these motels where you park in front of your door. My mom had parked in front of the door. This friend of hers pushed the door. My mom hadn't shut it all the way. She pushed the door open and there lay my mom passed out on the floor. Her friend called 911. The ambulance came. They picked her up. She flatlined on the way to the hospital. They resuscitated her. The doctor at the hospital said, you were dead, we flatlined you, we resuscitated you, I suggest you never do that again. And yeah, and that was not her last drink. She, some days later, went into a hospital in Dallas, Texas. Now, this experience happened when I was 14. And as a child of an alcoholic, those of us who are know that you get a front row seat to a lot of stuff. And that was what I had a front row seat for. I saw that happen. I saw my mom die, essentially. That's what I witnessed. And here's what I learned. I was smart. I learned this. If alcoholics drink, they die. That's what I learned. That was my experience. She went to treatment in a hospital in Dallas, Texas. And this hospital had family day. You guys ever heard of that? Family day at the treatment center? All right. Some head shaking yet. Been there. And here's what happened. There was a therapist and our family, which was mom the alcoholic, dad the, at this point, Al-Anon. Here's what happened to my dad as my mom was bouncing around in and out of detoxes. He went to Al-Anon. Thank God for Al-Anon. Yeah, give them a hand. Thank God for Al-Anon. He changed. He changed from an enabling spouse to someone who had my mom court committed to treatment. And that's because of Al-Anon. And I'm going to use it. This is a terrible analogy. But he mainlined the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, of Al-Anon, right there. Boom. And he changed, had her court committed. She went to treatment. So it was my mom, the alcoholic, my dad, the Al-Anon, my brother, who at this time was 16 and I was 14. And this therapist in this family day began describing alcoholism. I think maybe the purpose was, here's a little education of the family, here's your mom, here's what alcoholism is, and you know, well, this is the first time I really ever heard of what alcoholism is, and she started to describe alcoholism. And this is what I remember, and I'm going to share this with you. not to, this is not what it might intended to be in, like the definition of an alcoholic or what alcoholism is, okay? This is just what she shared, what I remember her sharing, okay? Here's what I remember her sharing. She said, alcoholics are people who are, generally speaking, who are uncomfortable in their own skin. They feel like they want to split out of their body. They often walk around with clenched fists and grind their teeth and just feel totally uncomfortable. And she's describing this, and I'm 14, and I hadn't had a drink since I was 5. And I and I identified. I went, oh, man. And then she said, alcoholics are perfectionists. They set extremely high bars for themselves, which they can never meet. And when they don't meet that expectation they set on themselves, they beat themselves up mercilessly. And I don't know if that describes you. I don't know if that describes other all alcoholics. That described me at 14. Now, just so you know, it describes me at 56. You know. Oh, I didn't mention my sobriety date, did I? January 3rd, 84. So I got sober at 21. I'm 56 right now. All right. Do the math. 35 years. Actually, I had 35 years earlier this month, so it was a really nice time. I should have mentioned that earlier. Okay, never mind. Where was I? Perfectionist. I still am. It's something that I still... is one of my character defects. It ends up on my defect list all the time. Anyway, she said, alcoholics are people who have this idea of how the world should be, this vision of this idyllic world. And they have this idea that if everyone worked with them to achieve this ideal, everyone would be happy. Does that sound familiar? That comes right out of our big book, by the way. That is me. I have this idea of the world, and I have it today, of the way the world should be. And if you guys would only behave, you know, just do what I want, trust me. The only problem is you all have your own ideal, and I'm not behaving, am I? I don't behave. So I totally identified with that. And she said some other things. I'll mention one more that she said. She said, alcoholics, generally speaking, are belligerently defiant. I hear you saying, no, I'm not. I identified with that. Oh my God. At the, you know, from when I was 5, you tell me to stand up, I'm going to sit down. You tell me to go left, I'm going to go right. You tell me to shut up, I'm going to start talking. And I totally identified with that. So she's just gone down this list of characteristics of an alcoholic. I'm 14. I hadn't really had a drink. And I identified. Then she said something very, very important. This is extremely impactful for me as a 14-year-old. And what I'm about to share, I do not know if this is true. I have not found it in any conference-approved literature. So if you know of it, let me know. But what she shared was a fact. Again, I don't know if it's true, but I believed it was true when I was 14. And the reason I believed it is this woman, who was the therapist, she had credibility. I believed her. I believe she knew what she was talking about, and I believe that what she was talking about was fact. And she said this. She said, if you are a child of an alcoholic, you have a 50-50 chance of being an alcoholic yourself. I don't know if that's true, okay? It may not be true. But when she said it, I believed it. That's what's important. You hear me? I believed it. Now, she had just described what an alcoholic was right down the line I identified. And it was me and my brother, right? And I looked at my brother, I looked at me, and I said, it ain't gonna be him. And math was my best subject. You know, what does 50-50 mean? If it's not him, who's it going to be? So here's what I got at the age of 14. I learned this. If you're an alcoholic and you drink, you're going to die. And as a child of an alcoholic, I had a 50-50 chance, and it was going to be me. I knew I was going to be an alcoholic. And I was armed with something that day that the big book describes as self-knowledge. I got self-knowledge that day. And I said to myself, as a smart kid, I ain't never gonna drink. If I don't drink, I won't become alcoholic. If I don't become alcoholic, I won't die. And that was a decision I made at the age of 14. Pretty smart, eh? Yeah, I didn't drink. For 5 months, I didn't drink, right? Then came the fateful day. And this is my real drink, first drink. I love to talk about this. You know, only in AA do you hear people talk fondly, with fond memories of their first drink, but here it is. Because it was never as good as this. I chased what I experienced that day for 6.5 years. Let me describe who I was this day as the same person I was for many, many years up to this point. And I arrived at school this day. This is September 1977. You remember that? Led Zeppelin was on tour. Yes. I didn't see him. Darn it. But who did? Anybody? Oh, I'm jealous now. Dang. All right. I heard it was good. Anyway, here's the person I brought to school that day. Same person I brought every day. I felt, I don't know if anyone identified with this. I felt apart from, less than. I felt different. I felt like there was something wrong with me. I felt like deep down inside, there was like an ache that I could never fix. And I'm pointing right here to my sternum, because that's where I feel it, right here. It's this tightness in my chest. And I felt like no one else had this experience but me. I felt like everybody at that school knew what was going on except me. I had this, I don't know, this these voices in my head, and they talked to me, and they never said anything good about me. And this is who I brought to school that day. And this dude came up to me right before lunch, and he had long hair, one of those Led Zeppelin t-shirts, and very red eyes. And he said, this is 1977, okay? He said, come with us. You want to come with us? And I said, sure. I didn't know where he's going. Somebody was giving me some attention. Let's go. We went across the street, and I had my first drink. And my first drink was not alcohol, but this is the way it went down. Trust me, I drank a ton, but this is my first drink. It was weed, okay? And by the way, it wasn't the last time I smoked weed. I smoked a lot of it. I did all sorts of drugs, but I'm an alcoholic because I identify with what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, we go, he rolls it up, passes it around, and something happened to me that day. And what happened to me that day is happened to me every single time I drank. And what happened was, just like that, I changed. I was this kid who was apart from and less than and a nobody with no friends, and just like that, I was somebody. I felt like I was with my best friends. I knew them for 5 minutes. They were my best friends. I felt like something about me had changed. And I was different. The day before, in my mind, don't ever drink. You become an alcoholic. If so, you're going to die. That experience happened, and I said, what in the world was I thinking? This, and what I found, and this is really why I believe I'm an alcoholic, is what I found that day was the answer to every problem I ever had. And that was alcohol. Alcohol fixed me. It fixed everything in the world. It fixed you. It fixed everything. It made me feel okay. You know that pain right here? It went away. And those voices went quiet. And I loved it. I loved it. And that's why I drank, is I wanted that. Now, the first time was like, it was a spiritual experience, literally. And I believe it was a spiritual experience because I have a spiritual malady that's talked about in the big book. And that spiritual experience fixed my malady. It fixed me. Now, the only problem is the thing that fixed me is not the thing that can fix me. Does that make sense? So it fixes me temporarily. But man, it was on. And I don't know if I made this decision consciously, but here's what I may have. If I did, here was the decision. I'm going to do everything I can to get this feeling every moment of every day for the rest of my life. And that was how I drank. I was drunk or high every minute of every day. When I woke up to the time I went to sleep or passed out, that's the way I was. And that was tough at the age of 15. You guys remember that? You couldn't just walk in and buy a six-pack. So us 15-year-olds were doing all that, those outside issues in order to get that feeling. But that's what I had to do. Luckily, at that time, the drinking age in Texas was 18. So, then it got much easier. But that feeling was what I was looking for. Now, to back up a little bit, my mom got sober in that treatment center, April 1977, and she's been sober ever since. And if any of you know her or heard her, you know that she's an amazing member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She got sober. And then in the summer, late summer is when I got started. And about 9 months to a year after her sobriety, she got sober, she sort of started to come to a little bit. You know how it is? She started to wake up and things. She started to look around, and her eyes fell on me. And she's like, oh my God, my kid, he's drinking, he's doing drugs, he's working up a story. So she said these things to me. By the way, don't say these things to your kids. She said, James, we're saving a seat for you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot wait for you to join. You can come to my home group. I've got the perfect sponsor picked out for you. She said these things to me. And she said, we will trudge this road of happy destiny together. And I was 16 at the time, 15, 16, 17 hearing this. What do you think I said? Oh, no. No, 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 no. You AA people are the lamest people I know. Now, by the way, I don't believe that now. This is a teenager. When she got sober, I missed this part. When she got sober, she dragged us to open AA meetings at the Harbor Club in Fort Worth, Texas. Sunday morning at a speaker meeting. So I'd go in and hear these people talk. The first thing I noticed about them, they were really old. And they're a lot younger than I am now, but they were old then. And they would tell these amazingly dramatic stories about getting divorces and wrecking cars and going to jails and institutions and insane asylums and all dramatic stuff like that, and everybody clapped for them and stuff. And I said to myself, as long as that stuff don't happen to me, then I'm not an alcoholic. So if I can drink and all that stuff doesn't happen, I'm good, right? And so I drank 6.5 years, and I don't have a real dramatic story. I know a friend of mine, Lon, he had a dramatic story. He was in the Marines. He blacked out in the Philippines and came to in Australia. And I thought, I want that story, you know? I blacked out in Hearst, Texas, and I came to in Euless, Texas, right next door, like 2 miles. That's as far as I went. So not real drama. I never got divorced. You know, I'm comparing myself to these guys I heard at the Harbor Club in Fort Worth. I never got divorced. Of course, I never got married, so it's kind of hard to get divorced if you're not married. I never lost jobs because of my drinking that I admitted. I was never homeless. That was another one. I slept in my car for a little while, but that was just for a short period of time. Right? I never went to jail. I never went to jail. The first time I ever went to jail, I was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go to jail once a week now. But I never went to jail. Can you believe that? Self-respecting member of AA standing up here saying he's never been to jail. I've never been to jail. What else? So all these things hadn't happened to me. And I had this idea in my back of my mind. That's what makes you an alcoholic, these circumstances. Let's call them the calamities. These calamities are what it is that makes a person an alcoholic. And it took me a really long time to get this, really long, that it's not what alcohol does to us, it's what it does for us. And it's what alcohol does for me, what makes me an alcoholic. Here's why I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because if I take one drink of alcohol, I cannot predict what's going to happen. I can have a couple, or I can lose a few days and end up in Euless, Texas. That's why I'm an alcoholic. And the Big Book describes that as what's called a physical allergy. That means if I take one drink, I cannot predict how much I'm going to drink. So that I identify with. The other thing I identify with is I have this thing called the obsession of the mind. And what that is I think about drinking all the time. Drunk or sober, I'm thinking about it. I think about how I'm going to get the next thing. I think about where I'm going to hide it. I think about who I'm going to be with. I think about all that stuff. And I don't know about you guys, but the ritual of all that was so comforting to me. You know that feeling? It's like you just pour it. This is when the days, you know, I pour it out of the bottle. You just pour it and feel better. Anybody relate to that? That was me. And the whole idea of it, the thought of it, the ritual of it gave me a sense of relief. And I drank, and I'm an alcoholic because of what the doctor's opinion says. It says men and women drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. And the effect produced for me is that this tightness in my chest, these voices in my head, the clenched fists, the clenched teeth, all that goes away for a short period of time. And when I started, that period was lengthy, and by the end it was really, really short. And it was very, very, it was basically not working for me. And the sad part of my story is that alcohol worked for me. Alcohol was the answer to my problem. I have a spiritual malady. Inside of me, something is missing. And alcohol was that substitute for a long period of time. And it stopped working. That's what's sad. It stopped working. You guys feel sorry for me? I did. Aw, it stopped working. And what's really sad is I drank long after it stopped working. That's what's really sad. And this is what happened. Again, no real big dramas, but this is what happened to me. I'd watch my mom, right? I did not want to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not want to come here. Not only because of what my mom, you know, said when I was 15, 16 years old, but if I came to AA, it would admit that I failed. That I was a failure. And one of the things that I cannot do is I cannot fail. I cannot be wrong. So I did not want to come to AA and admit I was a failure. And I did not want to do it. And I wanted to be drunk. And also at the time, I did not believe I was an alcoholic. I mean, there's something in the back of my mind that said, yeah, you're an alcoholic. But I had not admitted to my innermost self, right? And so here's what happened to me. December 31st, 1983, I went to a New Year's Eve party, got incredibly drunk. My last memory is I was crawling on this person's front porch, trying to make it to the edge of the porch so I could throw up into his bushes and not make a mess I would have to clean up later. That was my last memory. I came to on January 3rd, so I lost those days in there. Now, here's what I believe, okay? I don't know this for sure, but I believe it because it was true up to that point. On January 2nd, I was not an alcoholic, and I did not want to be, so I wanted to be drunk. There's my mind, I'm not an alcoholic. There's nothing wrong with me. Because to be an alcoholic would be a failure, and I wanted to be drunk. And I came to on Saturday, on that morning, I don't know what day it was of the week, January 3rd, 1984, I came to. And that morning, I had the big book describes as a moment of clarity. I had a moment of clarity, and the clarity was this: I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. Oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. That was miracle number one. Now, I did not ask for this, that I remember. I've heard a lot of stories in AA of people praying to God for that and having it happen to them. Okay? My mom's husband, Dave P., you've probably heard him talk. His story is he came to AA for a couple of weeks drunk. He'd drink on the way to the meetings, he'd drink on the way home from the meetings. He was very respectful. He didn't drink at the meeting, okay? So and these people in Dallas, Texas, where he got sober, would say to him, they would bring the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. The message was this: Dave, we cannot help you. If you want to get sober, you need to ask God for help. He said, I don't believe in God. They said, I don't care. We don't care. Ask anyway. He went for weeks. One day, he was drunk. He said, God, if there is a God, please help me get sober. And the next day is his sobriety date in April 1976. He's still sober. That's his story. That's not my story. My story is I came to and I was an alcoholic. That's a miracle. So I'm an example, you guys, of a person for whom miracles can happen without my consent. All right? I didn't ask for it. It just happened. It's a grace. It just happened to me. That's miracle number one. Miracle number two, I wanted to be sober. For the first time, and I could not remember when I wanted to be sober. and here I'm 21. What do you do? What do you do when you're 21 and you realize you're alcoholic and want to be sober? Here's where my story gets lame. Sorry, everybody. I called my mom. I know. Tough guy from Chicago calls his mom. So I pick up the phone. I said, "Mom, I'm an alcoholic." And she goes, "James, no kidding, you know." And then she said, "Oh, I've been praying for this day." I'm like, "Oh God, here we go." And then I said, "Mom, I want what you have. I want to be sober." And she said, "James, then you need to go to AA." And I said, "Mom, I don't want it that bad." And I hung up the phone. Click. Man. There's another way, isn't there? Man, so I did not want to come to AA. I did not want to come here. Okay? So if somebody dragged you here this morning, and you don't want to be here, and you're sitting there and you say, "This AA thing, man, I don't know about it," I want to say welcome. Welcome. My experience is it doesn't matter why you're here. It's just that you're here. Because what I did is I started to go to AA. And I became what I like to call a fringe member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was on the outside of AA. What that looked like for me is I'd come to the meeting late, I'd leave early. I never got one of these big books. Forget it. Don't need that. I didn't get a sponsor. And when I'd come to meetings, I'd sit in the back row. You know what the back row is called in AA? It's called the shoe section. Because that's where the sneakers and the loafers and the slippers sit. Huh? Present company excluded, all right? It's a full room. You had to sit back there. It's not you guys. But when I sat in the back row, that was me. I was in the shoe section back there. By the way, that joke was a Frank Honeycutt joke. Many, some of us here may know Frank or knew Frank. He was an amazing, he was my sponsor for a while. Anyway, I didn't want to be here, but I came. And I was a fringe member in AA, but I came. And something happened to me. And this is the second miracle that I want to share with you. A second example that miracles happen for me without my consent. And let me tell you this. This went on for months. I want to say 10 or 11 months. So we're talking about the end of 1984. My last drink was January 3rd. I've been a fringe member of AA, which means I was a periodic when I went, and I did not go do any of the work in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was months. And here's what happened, you guys. I got sicker than I ever was. I had this idea that if I just stopped drinking, everything was going to be okay. That's what I thought. January 3rd, it was God just yanked alcohol out of my life. I haven't had a drink since. And I thought everything's going to be okay now. But for some reason, I got sicker and sicker and sicker. And I'm talking about in my mind and in my psyche. My soul, basically. I got so sick. And what I learned was this. The reason I'm an alcoholic for real is because alcohol was never the problem for me. It was the solution for me. And what happened on January 3rd is, for whatever reason, God ripped my only solution from my life, separated me from that solution. And then for 10 or 11 months, I lived my life without any solution to my real problem, which is alcoholism. And my real problem is a spiritual problem. I have what the big book describes as a spiritual malady. And I feel it right here, right behind my sternum. This is where I feel it. Some people have shared they feel it a different place, but this is where I feel it. And it's this tightness, and it's like this void or this seriously deep lack in the middle of my soul, really. It's a soul sickness for me. This is my spiritual malady. And for 6.5 years, I treated that alcoholism with alcohol. And here's what I found. This is my personal experience. Alcohol is the second best treatment for alcoholism. Second best. The only problem with it is it will eventually, if it doesn't kill me, it will eventually stop working. And then I must find the real solution to alcoholism, which is the spiritual awakening promised in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's my real solution. And I guess I want to spend some time talking about that. I got sober at the age of 21. I've grown up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had an amazing life here. Let me just tell you a little bit about what it's like now so I don't forget. You just saw I have a beautiful wife. I've got three great kids. My oldest is 25. Come on, you guys. That can't be true. So you got to say no way or something. My oldest is 25. No way. Thank you. middle is 22. My youngest is 20. Yeah, day before yesterday. Or is it yesterday? 20 years old. And I live in Tallahassee, Florida. I have a beautiful life. I have the love and respect of the people in my community. I love people. People love me. This is my life. And this is how I found that life. And it's through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the purpose of the steps is to introduce me to and help me grow in a relationship with a power greater than myself that is my very own. And so here's how it happened to me. 11 months, crazy. Without alcohol, sicker and sicker and sicker. And I'm sitting in my home. I'm an isolator when I'm like that. And I'm sitting at home and I'm doing something really important. I'm watching TV probably. And I get a phone call. And this phone call is from a woman named Barbara. And this woman is a woman my mom sponsored. And I knew Barbara, and I knew her kids. We lived in a house. There was a fence in the backyard, and they lived in the house right there. I used to jump that fence all the time, run with their kids. And so I knew her. She called me and said, James, there's a woman I sponsor. She needs to get to an AA meeting. I've called every woman I know. Nobody can take her. Will you take her? And I'm sitting at home, and I'm consumed of self. I'm thinking about myself and what my problems are. I had a big problem that day. I don't remember what it was. It was big. And she said, she needs to get to a meeting. Nobody can take her. Will you take her? I didn't want to do that. Why would I do that? What good would that do for me? I'm busy. I was watching Mission Impossible, I think. I'm busy. But I heard a word come out of my mouth that surprised me. And that word was, yeah, I'll do that. I didn't want to do this. I was convinced that doing this would not be helpful to me at all. It would not solve any of my problems. And all I thought about was myself. And you know, the big book says that about us, doesn't it? Selfishness, self-centeredness, the root of our troubles. Consumed of self. And here's what I believe. I have this spiritual malady. It's right here. And I feel it right here. And it's painful. And because it's painful, I focus on it. Right? And I'm focusing on the center of myself all the time. That's why I'm selfish and self-centered. I call myself a navel gazer. Any of those things like that? Thinking of myself all the time. I heard myself say yes. I went and picked her up. We went to an AA meeting, and I walked into this meeting. You see this table right here? There's two of them end to end, and these chairs in a circle around the table. I sat down, and then right across from me, a few minutes later, sat this guy. And then the meeting started, and that guy was the speaker. And that guy told his story, and for the first time in my life, I heard my story. I heard my story. That guy shared my story for the first time. I didn't think I could do this AA thing. In my mind, an alcoholic was somebody who, like I described, those old guys in Fort Worth, Texas, in 1977. Divorces, jails, homeless, institutions. Okay? None of that happened to me. I couldn't be an alcoholic. And this guy told his story, it was my story, and I heard it for the first time. And that day, I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want you guys to know this. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to be there. And yet God wanted me there. And he put me in the chair right across from the guy. And so I'm a guy for whom miracles can happen without my consent. If it were up to me, I wouldn't have been there. And this goes to something that Frank Honeycutt taught me a long time ago. He said, James, if you want the miracle of AA, you need to take actions contrary to how you feel. I felt like staying home. I felt like being by myself, thinking all about myself. And I did a small, easy, barely inconvenient act for someone else. And my life changed. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous right there. That's it. And Frank says, if you want to change, go help somebody. And I didn't want to do that. And yet here I am. And I joined Alcoholics Anonymous that day. It's been quite a ride. And I started working those steps. And here's what the steps introduced me to. It introduced me to a God of my own understanding. Now, when I was this tall, I believed in God. I was raised in a church. I believed God. I believed there was a God. And I believed. And I've always believed. Even in the depths of my alcoholism, I believed. And then I grew up. And at the age of 15, I started drinking. And from 15 to 21, 6.5 years, I drank. And what happened was, it separated me from that God. And here's the irony of my life, you guys. I told you about the person I was when I went to my first drink, right, at the age of 15. I felt less than and apart from and unloved and unlovable. And I didn't feel like I fit anywhere. And I want you guys to know that was all a lie. That was a lie. At the age of 15, I was loved. I was loved. My parents loved me. My mom, even in the depths of her alcoholism, you guys who know her, she is the most loving person perhaps on planet Earth. And she could love then. My dad loved me. My brother loved me. Those people in that church loved me, at the school. They loved me. But here's my problem. I'm an alcoholic. I have a spiritual malady. I cannot feel the love. It was there for me all along, and I could not take it in. And then, here's the irony. Take that guy. Fast forward 6.5 years. Those things that were a lie became the truth about me. That's who I was. And turned myself into Alcoholics Anonymous finally after I went to that meeting with the guy sitting across from me, and I started working the steps. And here's what I learned. That this God that I felt as a kid started to come back to me. And I was like, how am I going to find this? Where am I going to find this God? And someone turned me to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and said, and turned me to the page where it says that deep down within every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And he said, James, you're going to find God within. And I'm one of these people, I don't know about you, I looked for God everywhere he wasn't. I looked in the bottle, in the drugs. I looked in relationships and sex, in money, in power, prestige. Here's one, and this is one that is my biggest demon today. This is the thing I struggle with most today. I am so overly concerned with what you think of me. Anybody identify with that? I am way overly concerned. I just want you to like me. Here's why. Because if you don't like me, there's something wrong with me and you're going to leave too. That's how I feel about it. And that is what's as a result of a spiritual malady. And what I come to believe that over this time, this is how I felt in the beginning, is that, yeah, God's within. And I felt like at this age, God was there. It's like a candle burning inside of me. Let's imagine that. There's this candle in right here inside. And it was lit and it was burning, and then I drank and I drank and I drank, and it's like I blew that candle. It's like, whew, out goes the candle. And I find myself at the age of 21, so sick, so separated from God. And here's what I learned. That candle can never go out. Can never go out. That's God. Who am I to think that I can blow out the candle, which is God, that's inside of me? How arrogant is that? But it can be obscured. There's a line in our book that I love, and I love that word obscured. Isn't that a great word? That it's obscured by calamity, pomp, and worship of other things. calamity, the consequences, the insanity, the unmanageability of my life. Pomp, look at me. Aren't I something? My ego. And then worship of other things, like I said, alcohol, drugs, sex, money, power, prestige. All these things do is cover God up. And for me, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is lifting this cover. And my third favorite AA speaker, I'm my wife and mom, of course, is Chuck Chamberlain. You guys ever heard of him? He had a line, the purpose of what AA does is uncover, discover, and discard. And what happened was the process of Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps, uncovered this thing inside of me. And I discovered this truth that it was always there. It's always there. That God never leaves me. It's me who leaves him. Yeah. And I think the greatest promise in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is in the very beginning of step 12. It says, having had a spiritual awakening. And so what that says to me is that what the steps do is give me a spiritual awakening. And to me, awakening is something that is happening right now. I'm not awake. I'm awakening. Does that make sense? I'm more awake today than I was last year, but there's still part of me that's asleep. And I think that for me, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a continual spiritual awakening. And I want you guys to know I'm a work in progress. I'm not finished yet. Let me rephrase that. God's not done with me yet. Okay? I got lots of room to grow. There's a lot, I have a lot of character defects. I do an 11-step review every night, well, almost every night. And I have lots of character defects that come up, you guys. I'm arrogant at times. I say things that hurt other people. I'm very imperfect, but I'm better. I'm better. I'm more awake today than I was just a month ago, say. All right? And so I'm getting more and more awake. And I want to, I'm almost done, but I want to tell you a little bit about my son. Now, I have three kids, and Ryan is the oldest. He was born in 1993. And I never thought I could love as much as I love him. When he was born, I felt a love that I thought I was incapable of. And it just filled me from the top of my head to the bottom of my toes. And but I want you to know I'm a human being. And I don't love my son perfectly or infinitely. I love him a lot. But there's a limit to my love because I'm human. And I've learned along the way that God is not human. God is perfect and infinite. And the love that I feel for my son is just a drop in the bucket for the love that God feels for me. And just think, this maybe I love my son this much. The water in that ocean is how much God loves me. And I believe he loves every one of us in this room like that. So Ryan was born, and man, what a kid. He was like an angel. I swear he looked like an angel. He had this blonde hair, curls, and the sun was right behind it, looked just like it. Now, he didn't act like one. I'll tell you that right now. When Ryan was two, he put terrible in terrible twos, but what I want to tell you is what happened when he was one. And what happened when he was one is we learned something about Ryan. I want to preface what I'm about to say by saying this. My reaction to what I'm about to share with you is born of ignorance. Okay, the way I reacted to this was because I'm was ignorant at the time and because I'm selfish and self-centered. Okay, you hear that? Ignorance. We're realizing that Ryan was not reacting to things like all the other kids that he was playing with. Took him to doctors.
At about a year old, we learned that Ryan was diagnosed profoundly deaf. And so if you don't think I'm grateful for these folks right here, let's give them a hand. Sorry, guys. Anyway, here's my ignorance, okay? And here's my self-centeredness. My first reaction to that was, God, why did you do this to me? Okay. I'm not proud of that. That's what I thought. Why'd you do this to me? And here's the other thought I had. This is the ignorant one. I thought Ryan's life would be small. And because of his small life, my life is going to change dramatically. And I want you guys to know I was so wrong. So wrong. We immediately started to learn sign language. And I'll share this story. The first sign that Ryan ever learned is the perfect word to describe alcoholism. What do you think that was? More. Right? More. That was his first sign word. And then I thought, 50-50 chance, huh? Yeah. And I'll tell this story. So he had to get two. Oh, first time he ever had a Coke, like Coca-Cola. Yeah. I don't know about the other one. I don't want to know. Anyway, he was like two, took this drink. You guys remember? Explodes in your mouth, comes out your nose, cough, cough. He did this, and he's like, more, more. I'm like, oh boy. I said, the kid's got potential, right? And then, here's what's funny. He had to get tubes in his ears, and you know, he had to go in for a procedure, put tubes in his ears. And they were gonna knock him out, so they gave him this drug. And they gave him a dose, and he didn't knock him out. Like father, like son, eh? They gave him another one. Didn't knock him out. They gave him a third one. Out, he goes, boom. And he has the procedure. A little while later, he comes to, and he's like, more. All right, more. So he had potential to be an alcoholic. I was kind of looking forward to it. You know, father and son trudging this road of happy destiny together. You know, years roll by, Facebook comes along, I become Facebook friends with him, and one day I see this picture scroll by, and it's his friend passed out. I was out of town on business. His friend drunk passed out on a floor, and I look at this picture and I go, that's my floor. These kids are at my house partying. I'm thinking, come on, Ryan, you can do this. And then, but, you know, he's not alcoholic. I'll tell you perfect reason. We traveled to Indonesia together a couple years back. And, oh, my God, what a trip this was. Let me tell you about this. I had this idea that Ryan's world was going to be so small. I was so wrong, you guys. His life is huge. He graduated from Rochester Institute of Technology with a civil engineer. I couldn't do the stuff that he did. He's got a good job now, and he's traveled the world. He went with one of his deaf friends to Iceland over the summer, and he's been all over the world. Well, this time he wanted to go to Indonesia, and I said, hey, who are you going with? He said, hey, Dad, I'm going to Indonesia for 3 weeks. I said, who are you going with? And he said, well, I was going to go with my girlfriend, but she can't go, so I'm going to go by myself. He's 21. I'm thinking, there's no way I would go by myself at the age of 21 to Indonesia. He's going. And I said, well, I'll go. You know. I'll go. And he's like, yeah, right, Dad, forget about it. You know. And then he called a little while later, and he said, hey, you still want to go? And I said, yeah. And he said, okay, don't stay long. Right? So we met in Bali. I stayed with him for 6 days. And he had this idea of taking this boat ride from Luang Bajau and doing these island hop. It's the most beautiful place I've ever been in my life. Doing these island hopping to see Komodo dragons over here and snorkel over here. And it was unbelievable. So we rented this boat, just he and me, big boat. Three crew members, and off we go. And here's why I know he's not an alcoholic. This guy, we stopped somewhere, we were snorkeling, I think, and this guy comes up, an Indonesian guy in a boat, and he's like, I got beer. And he says, hey, Dad, will you buy me a beer? And I said, sure. I bought him a beer, he opens it, he takes a drink, and he sets it down, and it sits there. It sits there. And I'm like, later I go, dude, why aren't you drinking that? And he says, oh, because it's warm. I'm like, come on! I said, hey, man, that's alcohol abuse. So he's not alcoholic. But I'll end with this. The gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous are many. I've got a beautiful wife. I live in a wonderful home. I've got three amazing kids. The love of people in my life. But the best gift that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me is a personal relationship with the God of my very own. And we were on this boat, and Ryan was, I was sitting there on the deck, and Ryan was out in the front, kind of on the bow thing, the thing that sticks out. And I can see this to this day, because I have a picture of it. The sun was setting right in front of us, and there was these mountains several miles ahead, and the light was just right. That he was silhouetted, so he looked like a shadow, and he's looking out, and he says, Dad, this must be what heaven looks like. And when I could talk, I said, you might be right. And that was a moment of heaven. And I want you to know, one of countless moments that I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous. God shows himself to me over and over again. The latest one is one of the latest ones is I woke up this morning, I looked out and saw this view. Right? And that's why I know God wants to be here. Wouldn't you want to be here if you were God? I would. And I want to say thank you all for my life. Love y'all. Thanks.